cow men had in the West. Because they got no competition, there's never going to be squatters come in to run them out. So let's teach those Eskimos to raise their reindeer, give them some planes so they can fly them out to the States. There's no better meat than reindeer meat. They could get twice for it here what they could in get for beef. They could fly out reindeer meat and put it in storage here, take care of it right, fly back material that they wanted, groceries and the like. They could be the happiest, richest nation in the world if they wanted, people in the world, if they just was taught a little bit. But what do they know about all of our fancy stuff here? When I first got them, they thought they was about the only people. A few hunters, whale hunters come up there and killed all their whale, and then the white man come up and killed all their walrus, and then the canneries come up and took all their salmon away from them. They've got nothing. But if the white man will just let them alone and let their fish alone, let them increase a little bit so they can eat a few, and teach them about the reindeer, lots of things. I'll go nuts over this. I got to stop. I'll tell you what I'd like, Dick, see this made into a magazine article if it could. Boy, that is a thing that is needed worse than anything I know. Those marvelous people up there, just imagine moving their children down to Anchorage. Why, it'd be the most dastardly thing that is ever thought of. Of course, the Chambers of Commerce says, yes, we'll accept your schools, that the government will come up there and build a $1 million school or two around their town and just for put a few Eskimos in. Why, yeah, the Eskimos are all right, but it'll just give the white men that much more chance to take them down the degraded road that they've started on. It's really the worst crime. That little woman, I'd like to talk to her. Well, there begin to be noise of a railroad leaving Valdez and one leaving the coast from Cordova. So I headed for Valdez. Well, I was broke, as usual. Needed a job, and they were starting a pack train out. And I got a job on the pack train. I picked for my saddle horse, I picked out a little one-eyed sorrel, a pretty little animal, put the saddle on him and forked him, and he immediately throwed me. But it only took 2 or 3 days, like I kind of got used to it, and back in the saddle again, I felt at home. Well, we had 14 head of pack horses and 2 saddle horses, of course, and one way we went, had to go, was up a switchback and over a mountain. And at one place, we had to go around an awful narrow place, just barely room for a pack horse to go. And this little one-eyed horse of mine, when we went one way, where his eyes was to the bluff, it fell off about 1,000 feet, almost straight down. When his eye was to the bluff, why, he'd go all right. But when I was coming back and his eye was the other way and he couldn't see the bluff, well, he'd walk right along the narrow ledge, and boy, I was ready to roll off that saddle pin any time. But you know, I've been asked so many times that if the Iron Trail wasn't kind of overdone. Well, the Iron Trail was written just about that. There was argument over the right-of-way, and a lot of argument, too. And well, we could, at times, when the river was really low, why, we could cross the river about 3 times, and save climbing up this hill. Well, this morning that looked fine and thought we could cross the river, so we got all packed up and we had to go out behind a little knoll. There was a cut through it for the grade, but we went on the river bar outside, and just as I come out from the other side of the little knoll, there were some men going through the cut, and wham, a rifle commenced to crack, and bullets commenced to whiz by my head. I don't know how many bullets was fired, but seemed to me like 100. I guess there's only a few, because there's only one man killed, and I believe 2 crippled. But somebody was shooting at us. And boy, did I get back behind that little knoll, I'm telling you, and get back to camp. Well, I got hold of my rifle and rode up the switchback to where I could see up the valley ahead. I couldn't see anything. Kind of glad I didn't, because I might have been playing long tall with somebody and got in trouble. But anyhow, we went on working. Of course, that thing stayed in court for years. Nobody's ever convicted. They ought to have been hung, but there wasn't. A lot of things like that happened up there. But anyhow, long towards fall, I had a friend working in the bank in Valdez, and he sent me out a letter. He says, get in here quick. Railroad's going broke. So I saddled my little one-eyed horse, and I headed down that grade. Well, but going down the grade, there's quite a cutoff. So down the grade I went and stood around the trail, come to a clear water stream and had no bridge across. And I just spurred my horse, and he lunged in, and we went plumb out of sight. Well, got into town, went into the bank too late. It's closed up. Everybody broke. Well, we could have took a lien on the horses for our wages, but hay was $125 a ton. We just couldn't do it. So we had to let that go. But I had made a trip across the first lower part of the river about a week before that. And five horses got across with their loads, and my partner headed the other off, so they all didn't get across. We didn't lose any packs, but we see it as too bad to cross any more than once. So instead of bringing a horse across back this river with their packs on, I just took their packs off and cached them under a rock and threw their mandis over them, and I knew it'd keep all right. Well, after the railroad went broke and things kind of got settled down, I got to thinking about that cache. So I borrowed myself a spring wagon. It was fall to that time, and I needed something to live on. So I borrowed the spring wagon and went up and got that cache. I figured partly pay me for wages anyhow. Well, sir, it was snus and tobacco and blankets and everything I didn't need, but I sold it anyhow and got some money out of it. And there it was, fall coming on and broke. And several of us there living in cabin. Well, we started working the boats longshore. We would, if boat had come in at night, well, there'd be one man set up all night and watch. When the boat would show up in about an hour, showed up in the bay about an hour before it got in, why, he'd run down, he'd wake all the boys up, we'd get down. We knew the dock manager too, and so we'd just about get on to work. And there's where I went and lost another fortune. Boy, I lost a lot of them in the north. There's a fellow by the name of Ellis there. I thought he was a screwball for sure, but proved later, of course, that I was a screwball. Well, he had come up there. He was a little older than I, not much, but he had red hair and he wore it long. He had never cut his hair shaved since he come up there. I've understood that he said when he come up there that he wasn't going to cut his hair shaved till he made a stake. Well, he didn't. But this Ellis, his long hair and beard and everything, we'd made $13.50 apiece on that boat. And he said to me, he said, Slim, if you'll put the $13 in the grub, I'll put my $13 in the grub, and we'll go down to the Cliff Mine and we'll work. And he says, I'll give you a half interest in the mine. Well, I didn't want to hook up with a screwball like that, as I thought he was, see. But it wasn't but a few years until he'd taken out $125,000 out of that mine, and then he sold it for $125,000. And I understood that he retained a 10% interest and took something like $100,000 out of that again. Well, just another mistake. I made lots of them. Man can't learn it all, you know. But you know, there was three men there, all young fellas, that I made friends with. I was the only one broke in the bunch. All the rest of them was doing something. But one was Holt, one was Diamond, and one was Bunnell. Well, of course, everybody that ever went to a movie knows who Jack Holt was. And I spent some time, 40, 50 years after, with him on his ranch in California. Mighty pleasant business. Well, Diamond, he took the law. And he was a honey and one of the best thought of in the court. Everybody knew Tony. And you got to be prosecuting attorney. Well, when he got in there, why, everybody knew they'd get a square deal if they went to Tony if they got any arguments with the law or wanted a question settled. Sometimes there'd be two fellas that was going to court over something. They'd go see Tony, one of them, and Tony'd get the other fella in. He'd settle the whole shebang without any court proceedings at all and send him away happy, maybe not even charge him a fee. After that, he was sent to Washington, D.C. as our delegate elected, and he spent about 12 years there. And then now he's a federal judge in Anchorage. He's yet one of the best thought of men in the North and the best known. For all his position, he'll be walking down the street and you're liable to hear any old-timer say, "Hello, Tony, where are you going?" Well, if you call him anything else, Tony will just be disappointed because he's just one of those kind of guys. Well, but now he took a notion that he'd go to Fairbanks and start a little school for roughnecks like me. Anybody that prospects, he'd teach them about prospecting. And just give them a little education. If it paid all right, if it didn't, it all right, he could do something. Well, it is through his efforts, and his efforts about alone, that the University of Alaska is founded. He was 90%, I'd say, responsible for the Alaska University, one of the finest colleges, I think, in the country. And he's responsible for so many kids' education. Kids that didn't have money to go to school, he could get them a job out on the bricks in the store, in the bank, any place, so they could work their way through college. At one time, I understand that 90% of the kids went to that college went to school. And the kids would always have a job in the summer, because people would send all over the North for somebody to, some kid to work for them during the summer at Pinellas County. And today he retired. But I think those two men have done more by far than any other two men in Alaska for culture and law and making Alaska what it is. And I'm sure proud to be able to call them a friend after a new year. If I go to the North and don't get to see both of them, I think we have to cheat. And it got to be some town. I've sawmill, a wharf, lots of buildings. It seemed to me like about two-thirds of them was honky-tonk saloons or something. But she was sure a going town. I stood on the corner one morning at 2 o'clock and with the marshal and watched five fights going on at once. There had been an army post put in across the bay. They called it Fort Liskum. And the soldiers had come over there. Sailors had come in. Well, of course, the marshal couldn't pinch them, but if they got too tough, why, he'd either kick them in the pants and send them onto the ship or over to Liskum, or he'd bump their heads together and make them be good kids. He got along with them all right, but she was quite a wild town, I'm telling you. But when I hit town, sometimes I was just out of luck again. I had lots of luck, but it was all bad. I didn't know this for 6 or 7 years afterwards, what had happened.